for interviews for three positions. We'll start with Roberta Sitch for reappointment to the HRA. Please. Please tell me if I pronounced your name right.
Yes.
Okay, great, great. We have a few questions for you, and then we'll open it up to counselor questions. Do you have any personal or financial interest, direct or indirect, with the HRA, or are engaged in any capacity where a conflict of interest may arise? Can you give a brief outline again for us of your educational and work experience and how that will benefit the HRA?
I'll be brief. I'll try anyway.
Microphone down or move the lectern. There you go.
Okay, hold that.
Good.
All right. So I am currently retired, but throughout my career, I have worked with housing and the HRA along with other housing providers. I started out actually working for the Human Development Center with a contract with the HRA as their services director, working in the six public housing high-rises, helping people maintain their housing. I then went to Access North Center for Independent Living, where, among other independent living skills, we helped people with housing. During my time at Access North, I actually collaborated with two of the former human rights officers, Meg Bai and Bob Grittal, in providing fair housing training to landlords, HRA included, and housing providers in our community, and really just kind of have, over the years, developed an understanding of fair housing, Section 504 of the Rehab Act, the ADA, reasonable accommodations, service animals, emotional support animals, and all of those things. Then as the executive director at ARC Northland, which I went after Access North, we developed a housing program to help people with disabilities find housing that worked for them, that was safe and affordable and accessible to them, and that program actually is still going strong today. So that's very briefly, in a nutshell, my whole career has been working with people from the disabilities perspective in finding housing that fit their needs.
That's very impressive qualifications, Roberta. Thank you. And you may have already answered part of this, but can you say why you're interested in rejoining this particular board?
Well, you know, as I just said, that kind of shows you my initial interest, but now after being on the board for the last 4 or 5 years, it's really exciting what the HRA is doing, and it's really exciting to be a part of it, to really look at the needs in the community and learn all those parts. And I can tell you, it took me the first couple of years just to figure out all the different things that work together, and I still learn all the time the different parts that work together. But I mean, everything from high rises to cottages to tiny homes to all these different things, so that people have a variety of options to choose from, and how important housing is. Really, there's no more important topic.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have any scheduling conflicts that might conflict with your ability to attend the meetings? Okay. And you have already talked about this, but the personal strengths that you would bring to the HRA?
I think when I first got on the HRA commission, I expressed hesitation because I said, well, I have a social services, kind of a human service background, and I really, you know, had thought that the HRA was, you know, developers and you know, coming at it from a different perspective. But now I see that all of those things, having all of those different perspectives at the table, makes for a really good commission, bringing that human services piece and that experience I have actually working within the HRA 20 years ago. I think that helps bring more to the table.
Good broad background. Are you serving on any other boards or commissions?
No. Okay.
And anything else you'd like to tell us before we open it for counselor questions? Counselors?
I want to thank Roberta Sitch. I had the pleasure of serving with you on HRA. I always tell people HRA was probably one of the most complex boards that I ever had to be a commissioner on, so I applaud your work. It is very complex with all of the funding, the rad work you do. You have to be not only thinking on your feet, but being very proactive and being very compassionate. You are all those things, so thank you again for your service.
Well, I would say that's a lovely way to end the interview. Thank you so much for your time. Oh, there is one more. Councillor Howell, go ahead.
Thank you, Tamanik. Thank you so much for being here and interviewing. And, you know, I have the honor of serving with you currently on HRA, and I've seen your leadership. I guess just as we continue to work together on the HRA, I was wondering what your hopes and dreams are of taking where you would want to see the board kind of go in this coming, under your leadership in this coming year. In HRA, and is there anything that other commissioners or council members can do to support?
There are so many things currently in the works that you know, we're always hopeful that they happen, and I think that there's always new opportunities, given the funding sources, giving land that's available, and what the community needs. I'm really excited for the new development up at Harbor Highlands. That's going to create a lot more housing, so I would love to see that moving forward. And I have to say, I really, really like the construction program that the HRA partners with Community Action Duluth, where people are, you know, trained in the construction trades, and are, you know, so you're teaching skills, livable wages, and rehabbing houses that need work at the same time. So that like meets so many needs, and I would love to see that expand if possible. And then just look for new opportunities.
Yes.
And just lastly, what do you see as the role? I know in the HRA commission meeting I asked a similar question. As you go forward with your reappointment to the commission, and then as also your nomination to be chair, and you're voted in for it, I'm wondering what you see as the role of an HRA commissioner.
I think that the role of an HRA commissioner is to is to really make sure that everyone's voice is heard at the meeting, of course, to make sure that we're asking questions and getting answers and bringing things to the table, and working with HRA management to support them in any way the commission can, to help accomplish the goals that the HRA puts forward.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Councillor Kennedy.
Thank you, Vice President. Chair, I forgot you, Tominick. Thank you. I was trying to put them both in, and I should have not done that. My question is, around the commission in general, and maybe even some of the staff. Thank you for being here, Ms. Keppers. I've had conversations with community members who feel like they're surprised if there's a development coming into their area, like right next door to them out west, and they were asking me, how do we understand what's happening? And so maybe it's a question on overall, as you see yourself and as you move back into this position, as we vote on Monday, what role do you think that you can play and you can help the organization play in making sure there's good conversations with community before developments happen? Because then what happens is after folks are upset, you know, my property taxes are going down, you know, all those things that come with when we know we need all this housing. And, you know, I don't know that you have to have an answer, but maybe help me understand how you understand that, and you can maybe help the staff. And it's probably more for the staff that's here than you. And so if I may be so bold, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Kennedy.
Well, she could answer, though, if you would like to.
And certainly, do you want me to invite Jill up to answer as well? I do, but my quick answer is that I think that community engagement is really, really important. And when there are concerns like, you know, what you just brought up, I would hope that those would be, you know, acknowledged and brought to HRA and to the commission so that we can look at how we do things going forward, because it's really important to be good neighbors. And it's just, you know, that, and that, if I'm understanding correctly, is what you're talking about, is being good neighbors.
Being good neighbors proactively. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for...
Would you like to ask...
Certainly give her a call as well. Thank you, though.
Any other questions? Great. Thank you so much for your time. In just 4 or 5 minutes, we'll be inviting Judy, is it Brewer? We'll be inviting Judy Brewer up for the DTA interview. Welcome back. Judy, can I call you? Judy, may I call you up to the podium, please? Good evening, and thank you for coming. May I call you Judy?
Yes.
Thank you. We'll start with your application for the DTA board. And the first question is, do you have any personal or financial interest, either indirect or direct, with the DTA? Or are you engaged in any capacity where a conflict of interest could arise? Okay, good. Can you give a brief outline of your educational and work experience and how it will add to the good of the DTA board?
So, to be honest, I've never served on a board like this, so I'm excited to learn what that actually means. So when I think about what I perceive that to mean, I've had a really broad work experience, working with a lot of different types of people in a lot of different positions. I like doing a lot of different things. My history educationally as well is my undergrad is community health education and promotion, and my current graduate school program is social work. So a lot of my life, and honestly, my daily life, I feel like prepares me perhaps for this. I'm a legally blind person. I've used the bus system my entire life, and I use it, daily. So it's something that I have just been, it's interwoven into my life, my school, my work, that kind of thing. And like I said, I've worked with a lot of different types of people in a lot of different types of situations. Never anything real specific to transportation as it be. But I think I have a lot of different tools that, in working together with people, working through problems, being able to listen to other people's perspectives and kind of take a lot of things into consideration. That's a lot of what I have done in my work and in my current training.
Very good, thank you. And why are you interested? You mentioned that a little bit in serving on the DTA board.
I love Duluth. I moved up here to go to school and then kind of decided I don't really want to ever leave. That being said, having a good transportation system is important to me, and I see it important to a lot of people around me who either do ride the bus out of necessity, want to ride the bus, or people who are not riding the bus but would love to ride the bus. Because I'm a bus driver or bus rider, this is a conversation I have with people a lot. And I'm excited to potentially be sort of in a place of understanding more of the complexities and the inner workings of how our DTA works. And I want our community to have a really good system. I think that it's so important to a community for people to be able to function, get where they need and want to go. And I want for myself. I currently live in a place where I can walk. I walked here today, and I love that. But I would like to make different choices and live in different parts of the city and maybe help be a support in how that can be robust. And at the same time, I understand that we need riders for it to be robust. So, I have a lot of desire to, like I said, not only learn, but to support the system that I use a lot.
Thank you. Do you foresee any scheduling conflicts with attending the DTA meetings?
I don't. That being said, I am out of town in the last week of June, planned before this ever came up. So other than that, I don't foresee any.
And what personal strengths would you bring to the DTA board?
Well, like I said, a lot of my, a lot of the work that I've done, I've done everything from office management, sales, marketing, like I said, now doing social work, therapy, clinical therapy is where I'm going to end up, and the work that I've done under community, in my community health education, kind of accidentally, even a lot of the other things that I've done, I used to have a podcast that was kind of about bringing our community get together. I feel like I have a lot of skills kind of around that, again, being able to kind of listen to different perspectives, hearing a lot of different points of view, and being able to understand them, and then again, hopefully being able to work together to figure out how do we make this as good for everybody as we can. But I also feel like, you know, a lot of passion for Duluth and loving being here and just wanting to continue to see us.
Are you, I think you answered this before, whether you are serving on any other boards or commissions.
I am not.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell the council about your application or your desire to be on the DTA board? Thank you. Councilors, if you have a question. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, Chair Timonic. I had just wanted to say first, thank you for your interest. I think your resume is very impressive, and I also think it's great to have interest for this board in particular from DTA riders, and so you have that direct experience with riding it almost daily. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Better Bus Blueprint that rolled out within this last year, and if you have any thoughts on that, and just kind of in the role of sitting on the DTA board, if you had any suggestions you'd bring forward or kind of feedback that you've either personally experienced or maybe heard in the community.
Yeah, that was a real hard rollout for for a lot of people. I'm like, how honest should I be? I would love to know. I feel like it wasn't handled incredibly well, and from a rider's perspective, I've had suggestions every day. that, again, not being outside the DTA, and like, okay, what is causing this to be a problem, right? Look, what is causing this to what are the barriers here, right? And that's part of what I'm hoping to kind of gain insight to. You know, from my perspective and how it went out, it felt like the community wasn't incredibly communicated with. I know from somebody trying to get answers, being left at bus stops multiple times, and being told to wait there and being left at bus stops, is what I saw was just a lot of disconnect. And it felt as though the community, from, again, my perspective and a lot of people that I talked to, it felt as if the community wasn't really a part or connected with that decision, or with a lot of decisions in the process of being made. So I have a lot of concerns about it. I think that it's something we could do. I just think there's, again, from my perspective, I think there's a lot of things that don't seem that difficult that could make the system a lot better, and maybe you could gain some of the people who I know who have quit riding the bus and basically, you know, just decided to use their car. I'd love to see those people, and they would like to see those people riding the bus again. So. I saw a lot of things that, yeah, I would love to have some input on just creating a smoother system that serves so the public doesn't feel like the riders don't feel like they are left out in the cold or at bus stops. And so, yeah, it felt like a pretty hard transition.
Thank you for the honesty.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Councilor Kennedy.
Thank you, Chair Tominick. Got it right. Thank you for applying to be on the DTA board. I have a question regarding sort of the fiscal end of how the DTA runs. And I know last year we had conversations with the DTA as they were rolling out and were asking for a certain amount of funding. And we really had to back that up a little bit according to what the community could afford, we'll just say. What is your role in figuring out how to navigate that? Who would you reach out to? And do you feel like you would not be able to be sort of a rubber stamp and really ask the questions?
I'd say the last thing you said again.
Rubber stamping, just what the director is saying, and you'd be able to ask the questions. And not knowing that you have to have a fiscal understanding, but just being able to ask the questions, and if it doesn't feel right, you know, go where you need to go to get the answers or to be able to push back.
That's what I would like to be to be able to do. I mean, that's kind of what I feel. I have tried to do that as a rider. I have gone to talk to people at the DTA multiple times. I have, you know, I and groups of other people have gone to talk to the DTA. And that's part of the reason I'm here, is that I feel like from being outside of it, I feel like one of the citizens left out and cold, right? I want to be able to be a voice to ask more questions. I mean, I went to one of their meetings right after the blueprint, and and tried to get some answers, right? And I do feel like there is that little bit of challenge of kind of the words that were said to me in that situation. But again, I felt like I had no, I felt like as a citizen, I wasn't sure what else I could do, right? And I'm also in the middle of grad school, so I had only so much time I could commit to this. So now that I'm almost done, and that's part of the reason that I'm here now, is that I'm almost done with school, so I'm like feeling like this is a good time for me to kind of dig in a little bit more. But that is something that I feel is important, because I want to be able to use the resources to, whatever that means, right, to maximize and create a, what I think can be a better system.
Thank you, Councillor Kennedy. I had a question along that line, which Councillor Cypress always used to ask, but I think you asked that. Thank you. Are there any other questions from the council? Thank you very much for coming, Judy. And in another 4 or 5 minutes, we'll begin with our interview for Matt Gottwald for Spirit Mountain. Welcome back, folks. We'll be asking Mr. Matt Gottwald to come to the podium to talk to us about his application for Spirit Mountain. Good evening.
One.
First, could you tell us if you have any personal or financial interest, either direct or indirect, with the Spirit Mountain Authority, or if you're engaged in any capacity whereby a conflict of interest may arise?
Not have any of that.
Thank you. Can you give a brief outline of your educational and work experience and how that will benefit Spirit Mountain?
I have a bachelor's degree in finance and economics. Also have a certificate in executive leadership and a certificate in change management. I was part of the 2020 Minnesota Young American Leadership Program cohort from Duluth, Minnesota. So I've kind of been able to network across not only government, but public and private sector as well. Currently have worked at North Shore Bank for 18 years now. Various roles, including credit underwriting, financial management, and currently I serve as the Senior Vice President of Operations, overseeing all the operations of the bank.
Can you tell us why you're interested in serving on this authority?
I see a lot of potential at Spirit Mountain. I've been in the ski industry my whole life. I grew up, my dad was a ski patroller, national ski patroller up at Lutzen. So I've been on a ski hill since yay big. I actually met my wife out at Spirit Mountain. We were paired together in Kurtz Duluth Adaptive Skiing. So I've been a volunteer ski instructor out there. Currently been a pass holder for probably a good 20 years now. And I'm learning how to mountain bike now. So it's, you know, kind of a good outdoor recreation area for all seasons.
Great. Do you foresee any personal scheduling conflicts which may keep you from attending the scheduled meetings? No. What do you consider your personal strengths that you would bring to the Spirit Mountain Authority?
A lot of ski industry knowledge. My wife and I do take a ski trip every year, and we try to go to different resorts around the U.S. and Canada. I'm kind of a ski nerd, to just kind of put that out there. I read their action plans for these different resorts, kind of see where they're going, what the industry's trends are, what type of technology can be used to help create efficiencies, not only for the front end, you know, customer experience, but also the background. I'm heavy into financial analytics, same with operational analytics, change management, like I've mentioned. That's kind of my role at the bank that I play every day.
That's quite interesting, and I hope that Spirit Mountain is right at the top of those favorite ski areas you've been to. So are you presently serving on any other boards or commissions?
I'm on Downtown Duluth right now.
Is there anything else you'd like the council to know?
Yeah.
Hey, councilors, if you have questions. Councilor Randorf.
Thank you so much, Chair. Matt, thanks so much for your interest in serving on the board. It's a lot of work, and I've had the lucky chance to work with you before on Downtown Duluth, on various things in the downtown with the task force, and you do good work. I think you sound like you are perfect for this. Tonight, we're actually going to have a couple items in front of us for Spirit Mountain on the Nordic Loop and the Lower Spirit Mountain Nordic Trail, as well as the snowmobile trails. So it'll be great to have your insight and your knowledge and your energy behind the decisions we make at Spirit Mountain. So thanks again for your service.
Councilor Kennedy.
Thank you, Chair Tominick. And thank you for applying to be on the Spirit Mountain Board. That's out in my district. And so I had an opportunity to spend time on the task force. And so really understanding and coming from a non-skier family, but living up there and hanging out there a lot, but not skiing. There's other things that happen up there that are a lot of fun as well. So your background is really impressive as far as making sure that we stay on the right side of the books for Spirit Mountain. I know they've been doing a lot of great work in Ann Glumac, and I will just say jokingly, I've heard they're looking for somebody to run the place someday. But my conversation or my question would be about community benefit and what does that look like for you, even beyond the skiing and allowing people to come and ski, and how diverse and how deep are you, do you think you'd be able to go to make sure everybody can enjoy skiing?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Skiing really should be for everyone and anyone to give a shot, in my opinion, whether it's alpine or Nordic, or even, you know, when you look off season, outside the winter season that we really haven't had this year. But Mountain biking, biking, hiking, it's really a recreational area for all forms of recreation. And I think Spirit Mountain plays a key role in that, as far as if we can get rentals and like what they're doing with Duluth Days in the next, this week, and or today actually, and then this weekend, I think is very important. And doing more of those throughout the day or out the year would be beneficial to get more community involvement, maybe even spreading it into the greater area, because not only Duluthians use Spirit Mountain, but Proctor, Hermantown, Cloquet, the more people you have being able to brought in at, you know, maybe a discounted rate from time to time, can actually be beneficial, and you get people hooked like I am.
Thank you. If I may just do a quick follow-up. I know this season has been tough, and maybe somebody will ask the question of you, how do you help them get through that? They've been doing a great job. And this year, some of the community benefits that had been happening with the winter out west is that the skating rink was built, and it's been a really good draw for community. It's a huge skating rink out at Spirit Mountain, free at the bottom of the hill. And so I just wanted to make sure community knew about that. We didn't skate this year, but we'll skate next year. They did have snow up the hill, though, because I went up there. And it was a little bit strange because we don't have any snow, but I digress.
I'll say I was out there Monday skiing, and I was actually very impressed with the amount of snow that the team has made out there, and it's in really good condition considering the weather that we've all experienced. And yes, the skating rink in the lower parking lot, I think it was a great addition. I personally don't think we have enough outdoor ice in this city, and that's a great use of space and, you know, another spot for non-skiers to just come and recreate, get outside, enjoy the fresh air, you know, what we have in the city.
Your pits and stuff down there, just, yeah, it's a great place.
That's usually where I drive over, I don't have a locker or anything there, so I usually pull up in the lower lot because it's a little bit easier, so I see all the stuff that they have set up there, and it's really well done.
Thank you, Councillor Kennedy. Councillor Mayo.
Chair Timonic, I want to thank you as well for your application. I think your finance background will be very helpful on the board as we move forward. And obviously, you just have a wealth of knowledge in this field. I did want to kind of dive on the other side of the spectrum, and you have history of working with Courage Kenny, an organization I volunteered with as well. And I thank you for your time of serving with them and helping with skiers of all abilities. But if you can kind of speak to ways in which you think Spirit can continue to grow in both ability and financial and income and other barriers that people may face when they want to go skiing. And I know Councillor Kennedy touched on a few of those, but if you want to just expand on any of that as well.
I think it is important, obviously with my connection with Courage Kenny now, Northland Adaptive Recreation, to be able to work with them. I think they need a little bit more space for storage and being able to, the current chalet is not really ADA compatible, at least the upper one. The lower one is a lot more compatible. And I think that's key, building something out that's going to be more ADA compatible and with more space. I know we didn't touch on ski patrol, but I mean, even in today's world, you look at our own different areas, that ski patrol room that they have up there is tiny. And some of the entries that you see out there is pretty gruesome, I'm not gonna lie. So as far as making it more affordable and stuff, that, I personally think we need to look at where we've priced ourselves in the market. Are we competing with a Lutzen, who is closer to $100 a day, or are we competing more with a Giants Ridge that, I could walk up to the window and get $45 a day, or are we in between? What type of services are we providing for that? One thing as an industry, skiing is expensive, and that's, this unfortunate reality of it, and how can you make that less expensive? Are doing those special days, for the area, for different groups. I've got a nephew who's in the after school ski program, and I think that's really important too. There's discounted youth passes for, I believe, fourth graders across the whole state of Minnesota. And I think that's really key to, tap into youth, give those opportunities for young families and other people a chance to actually get out and enjoy it.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Other council questions? Thank you for your time, and thank you for all the candidates that came in to interview with us tonight.
All right, we'll begin in 1 minute. A work event. He's in a work event, yeah. All right, good evening. We will start our agenda for tonight. And we're going to start with item two. Councillor Forsman couldn't make it tonight. He's at a work event. I will have Councillor Mayo read that in for him.
Thanks. Item two is resolution 147, authorizing a contract with Hanover Insurance Company for property insurance at the cost not to exceed $298,200.
All right, any questions on item two? Seeing none, we'll move to purchasing and licensing. Councillor Durwachter.
Thank you, President Randorf. So we have item number three, resolution 120, resolution approving issuance of a temporary on-sale liquor license to various licensees. Item number four, resolution 122, approving the issuance of a lawful gambling premises permit to the Woodland Amateur Hockey Association. Item number five, we have resolution 123, approving the transfer of an on-sale intoxicating liquor license held by PDMM Inc. Item number six, resolution 126, approving the issuance of an on-sale combination wine and beer license to Wired Whisker LLC. And item number seven, resolution 127, approving the permanent expansion of the on-sale intoxicating liquor license of JMM LLLP.
Thank you, Councillor Durwachter. I have question, do we have a typo in there?
Councillors, it is LLLP.
Thank you so much for that. And I have Councillor Mayo in the queue.
And Randorf, on item six, resolution 126, the Wired Whisker on sale license, do we have any background, if that's Mr. Johnson, if that's like a new business, if you know, what kind of activity will be going on there? From looking at Google Maps, I think that's a pretty small structure, and I think they had 43 listed as capacity or something on there.
Yeah, President Randorf, Councillor Mayo, yes, it is a new establishment. It is intended to be operated as a cat cafe. So my understanding is the relatively small square footage, there'll be adjacent spaces for food and beverages, and then cats on the other half.
Okay. Thank you for that context. Now the name makes sense.
Thank you so much, Councillor Mayo. Any final questions on items three through seven? Councillor Owl.
President Randorf, I just had a question on item four, resolution 122, the issuance of a lawful gambling premise permit to the Woodland Amateur Hockey Association. I was just wondering if there was some context that I could get. Is this fairly normal to issue? I just haven't seen too many of the gambling permits given out.
President Randolph, Councillor Wall, gambling premises permits are not especially common to come up as new business. They are essentially any time a pull tab station opens up in a bar, that's the type of permit that they need to be issued, since they go from year to year and can exist for quite some time in any given location. There just isn't a lot of turnover, and that's why we don't see a lot of them.
Thank you for that background.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. I have Councillor Vice President Timonic in the queue.
Thank you, President Randorf. I was following up on the question that Councillor Mayo asked. Clerk Johnson, can you tell me the combination wine and beer license? Was that 3-2 beer and wine? Is that all?
President Randorf, Councillor Timonic, yes. kind of just an odd quirk of Minnesota liquor laws. There isn't really such a thing as a beer license. There are only 3-2 beer licenses, but there's a provision allowing for the sale of full-strength beer in conjunction with holding a full wine license. So oftentimes, it's generally only restaurants that obtain these licenses, but they'll get the combination wine and beer to allow for the sale of full-strength beer.
And then there was a place on the application where they're supposed to attach a food license?
Yes. Under state law, only restaurants are generally eligible to obtain wine licenses. As part of our administering those licenses, we confirm in the Minnesota Department of Health that they are properly licensed as a medium to high risk category food establishment.
And has that occurred?
They are still in the process of building out the space, so they haven't yet received health approval, but we will be confirming that before anything can be issued.
So before this license gets issued, we have to have that. We will get that.
Yes. Every resolution approving a liquor license is premised as being contingent upon all necessary departmental approvals. And in this case, the Department of Health is one of those approvals.
And has parking had any involvement in this, Parking Commission?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Timonic. Councillor Owl, I have you in the queue again. Did you have a question? Okay, sounds good. Councillor Mayo.
President Randorf, just to follow up again on item 6, will we be seeing any, subsequent animal licensing or other permits that need to be issued for that? Just given that it's a cat cafe, that I'm not sure if this is the first of the type in the city, if we need to do any sort of restructuring.
President Randorf, Councillor Mayo, there won't be anything submitted to the council for this. Animal licenses generally don't require council approval. In this case, the licensee is partnering with Animal Allies to facilitate the pet adoptions. So the cats on the premises will be licensed with Animal Allies. And so they will all be properly licensed with the city.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Any final questions for 3-7? Seeing none, we'll move on to personnel. Vice President Timonic.
Randorf, Resolution 124, confirming the appointment of Dan Harkman to the Duluth Economic Development Authority. Dan Markham. Resolution 148, confirming appointments to City of Duluth boards, commissions, and authorities.
Thank you so much, Vice President Timonic. And just so you know, on item 9, we'll be unbundling that, so on Monday you will see each appointment listed individually. I have Councillor Owl.
I had already spoken to the clerk, Clerk Johnson, about this, but there is a spelling error for under the first appointment for the Housing and Redevelopment Authority. It says Robert Sitch. It should be Roberta. Just to make sure that error is the spelling error is fixed.
Thank you so much, Councillor Owl. Seeing no further questions, we will move on. We're going to go to Planning and Economic Development. Councillor Nephew is not here. I'll ask Councillor Swenson to read those in.
Resolution or number 10116 is resolution rescinding resolution 23500 and authorizing a development agreement between the City of Duluth and HNH LLC for the development of the plat rearrangement of parts of Western Woods Division, located southwest of Anderson Road and Decker Road. Number 11, Resolution 133, resolution authorizing an amendment to agreement L30869 with Stantec Consulting Services, Inc. for archaeological services as part of the environmental assessment process for the Central High School site redevelopment project for an increase of $10,564 and a total amount not to exceed $133,064. Number 12, Resolution 140, resolution rescinding Resolution 230992 and authorizing an agreement with LHB Incorporated for engineering services for a site assessment and evaluation for solar PV and storage project for an amount not to exceed $180,474. Number 13, Resolution 141, resolution authorizing DETA Resolution 24D09, authorizing an agreement with AMI Consulting Engineers PA to provide development of plans and specifications for performing maintenance dredging to allow for cruise ships to berth along the seawall behind the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center deck in the amount of $74,100. Number 14, Resolution 149, resolution authorizing the proper city officials to enter into a sub-recent funding agreement with SOAR Career Solutions, IDS 709 Duluth Adult Education, Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College, and the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities on behalf of Lake Superior College for Employment and Training Services funded through the State of Minnesota Pathways to Prosperity Grant Program.
And thank you, Councillor Swenson, for reading those in. I'll open it up to councillor questions. Councillor Owl.
Thank you, Mayor Randorf. I was just curious on item 11, resolution 133, I was just wondering if I could get some further just background than what is stated in the resolution. The developer is paying for the cost of the archaeological services, but it's coming forth to us. Just curious on the context and the background.
President Randorf, Councilor Owl, Jed, do you want to do it or do you want me to take it? This is on the Central High School site. This was a SHPO requirement. We're already engaging in a number of work up there, and SHPO expanded the scope of the work being done because they wanted an archaeological component to the assessment being done, which meant they had to do some certain shovel testing and visual checking of the site. We don't anticipate there's anything there, but that was why this contract got boosted up, because they had to do archaeological work on it. This all comes, ultimately the developer pays this, but since the city is contracting, it has to come through this process. But ultimately the developer pays these as part of the overall cost.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Any final questions? Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. On item 12, resolution 140, first off, I think it's super exciting that we're continuing to evaluate some of these sites for solar in the city. But can you kind of explain, I guess, the process behind we're rescinding a resolution we passed before and then authorizing a new agreement? Is it a change in contract? I couldn't quite tell from what's happening, the switch here on this one.
Randorf, Councilor Mayo, yeah, this was... This agreement was previously approved by council for a firm called 1898 and Company. They were the preferred vendor through the RFP process. Very close. The difference between them and LHB was very, very close in terms of capabilities. But in the process of finalizing the agreement with them, that always comes after the RFP, they got hung up on the insurance requirements and the distribution of liability. Everybody wants to shed their liability in these contracts. And between the city attorneys and their attorneys, we just couldn't get there. We worked very hard, probably for almost 2 months, to get to agreement with them, and we just couldn't get there on the contract language. So both parties agreed to walk away from it. We turned to the second RFP party, LHB, same agreement, same contract provisions, you know, same scope of work, and it's now we're just turning to the second one to get this work done, which we are also very excited about, of identifying these sites for potential solar across the city.
Fantastic. And LHB obviously has local roots. This 1898 company, did they have a local office out of Duluth, or were they based out of somewhere else? Do you remember?
Do not believe they were local. They had in-house capabilities. I believe they were a California company. But LHB, through them and through who they will subcontract with, will be providing that capability for this contract.
I saw Mr. Ronchetti raise his hand briefly. I don't know if you wanted.
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, I just have a little background on 1898 because I used to work for their parent company. So 1898 is a subcompany of Burns and McDonald and the Burns and McDonald Engineering. Burns and McDonald does have a local office. I only know this because I am the one that started the office.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Ronchetti. Any final questions for items 10 through 14? Councilor Mayo, you're still in the queue. Did you have any follow-up? All right, thank you. Seeing none, we're going to move on. Item number 15, it's under Committee of the Whole. It's Resolution 125, appointing election judges for the March 5th, 2024 presidential nomination primary election and for the May 14th, 2024 school board special election. I'll pause there for questions. Seeing none, we'll move on to item 16. It's Public Works and Utilities. Councilor Mayo.
Randorf, item 16, resolution 108 is amending MnDOT contract number 105-3870 for the West Superior Street reconstruction project under state project number 118-109-021 to increase the contract by $45,557.62 for a new total of $99,719.51. Item 17, Resolution 129 is authorizing a professional services agreement with HKA Global LLC for expert accounting services in the amount not to exceed $80,000. Item 18, Resolution 132 is authorizing a Fifth Amendment to the professional services agreement with Green Espel PLLP, increasing the contract amount by $250,000 for a new total contract amount not to exceed $710,000. Item 19, Resolution 134, is authorizing a professional services agreement with Good Point Technology LLC for a comprehensive road network survey for an amount not to exceed $146,520. And item 20, Resolution 138, is authorizing application for and, if offered, acceptance of a grant from the United States Department of Transportation's Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity RAISE for improvements to the aerial lift bridge.
Mayo. Any questions on items 16 through 20? Councilor Mayo.
Just for public clarification, and Attorney Lehr, if I'm wrong, correct me, are we going to have then a closed session on Monday to kind of talk about some of these resolutions that are in this?
Yes, President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, we were planning a closed session on Monday, and I don't know if the time has been finalized, but maybe it's going to 5:45 p.m.
Monday, 5:45, councilors. Yep.
Sounds good.
Any final questions on 16 through 20? Seeing none, we'll move on to item 21. We're going to public safety with Councilor Swenson.
Randorf, number 21, resolution 118, resolution approving settlement of in the matter of Brandon Houle versus City of Duluth in the amount of $90,000 pursuant to the terms of the settlement agreement. Number 22, resolution 150, authorizing the city to enter into a joint powers agreement with the City of Virginia, providing for the creation of the Minnesota Task Force 2 Urban Search and Rescue Team.
Thank you, Councillor Swenson. Pause there for questions. Councillor Swenson.
Yes. With resolution 150, number 22, could we just have Chief Cruget come up and just talk through that a little bit more? It was late ad and I haven't had a full chance, so if you could just educate us on that, please.
Absolutely, President Randorf, Councillor Swenson. This was a late ad. We've been working on this agreement essentially since December. There is a third party, so Duluth Fire Department, Virginia Fire Department, and the 148th Fighter Wing are all members of Task Force 2. Task Force 1 is the Urban Search and Rescue Team out of the Twin Cities, composed of several fire departments down there. There was definitely seen by the state's Fire Marshal's Office as a gap in the Public Safety Division in the north. So they will go on things like the mall collapse. So the last time they were dispatched locally was at the Miller Hill Mall collapse. They also did several runs during the Enbridge Pipeline construction throughout the Northland. When they had protesters that would go into the trench as they were building the pipeline, we would have to go in and do some things like that. So this team has actually been operating for approximately 2 years. We currently have a mutual aid agreement, an MOA, with the three parties, as it is now becoming a state team, just like our state hazardous response team or one of the state bomb squads. The state requires a joint powers agreement to get funding. So we'll be funded through the state, through either Homeland Security Emergency Management grants, state fire marshal funding, or what's called the FSAC, the Fire Safety Advisory Council, which is insurance money. Anybody who has homeowners insurance pays into this. So that's where the funding comes from. Our members are the biggest portion of the team. We have approximately 18 to 20 Duluth firefighters on the team. Air Guard Fire has around, I think, 12 or 13, and then Virginia Fire has somewhere in that 10 to 12 range as well. That's an overview. This JPA is replacing an MOA. We will actually be getting some funding through the state if we actually are dispatched out of the city. They can't do that. That's a legislative ask. So they have what's called a non-responsible party fund, which currently pays for the hazmat teams and the bomb squads. They tried to put this into legislation last year, but because we weren't officially recognized through this JPA, they couldn't do it. So if our members then go out of the city, we would be reimbursed for their wages or other things, other costs associated with that. Part of this agreement going through, there's about $1 million in funding currently at the state level that's waiting to be pushed down to this team for vehicle purchases, training. They go to specialized training at Volk Field in Wisconsin originally, annually, and then it's, I think, biannual. They do certifications there. So that's kind of the big picture. Do you have any specific questions that you'd like answered?
We do. We have one from Councilor Kennedy.
Thank you, President Randorf. Thank you for all of this work. This is amazing. I'm really looking into a lot of regional resources that we have. I'm wondering why the county is not included in this. They have a large sort of county sheriffs and all the other stuff as well as the cities.
They do, President Randorf, Councilor Kennedy. Their St. Louis County rescue team, they kind of just specialize on different things. So they're more of a lost in the woods type thing. So they do a lot of boat work. They do a lot of trail work, lost campers, people like that. They have cadaver dogs. This is a little bit of a more of a specialty. We could still use them as a mutual aid resource. But some of the equipment and specialized equipment and specialized training, we do a lot of this other stuff as career fire departments. So it's not that they couldn't be. They could be one of the if you read the attachment, there's what's called sponsoring agencies. They could be added on at a later time. Right now, the 148th Fighter Wing is actually going to be a sponsoring agency because of the way they do their legal stuff through their legal process is different than a municipality. So that's why they're a sponsoring agency. St. Louis County Rescue could come on as that. I think in the past, they've just chosen to focus on other things. They've got a lot of logs in their fire already. So
follow up, because it has a more of a fiscal sort of component to it. Do you feel like you have enough funding? And we know that a lot of this work sounds like it's regional, and the county has a little bit more than I know that the city does. I couldn't speak for the 148th or the others, but.
And of course, Kennedy, right now we do, because like I said, the training is coming through the state fire marshal's office. Some of the other training, the specialized, like the medical training, the EMT stuff, we already do that as part of our regular job. So there's no extra funding required. I don't know for sure at some point down the line if they'll be looking for some sort of other team pay, like the hazmat teams get premium pay. As of right now, that's not on the table. That would be something that would go through negotiations. But funding right now currently is all through the state or through, like I said, through that FSAC, the fire safety account. So I think it's sufficient. They've done their ask to the Commissioner of Public Safety over the last about 4 years, and they've gotten some other grants to take on those the startup costs.
Thank you, Councilor Kennedy. Next question is from Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. On the kind of scope of this team, can you speak a little bit more to, I guess you mentioned emergency management being the focus, but is there an enforcement? It sounds like there's not an enforcement wing to this. It's just fire. So you're going in and you're kind of doing rescue operations and, you know, big crises. Is my understanding correct in that?
Randolph, Councilor Mayo, yeah, there's no enforcement arm to this. This would be a response team. They are in the process of being typed, so like a FEMA typing, type 1, type 2, type 3, where they could be dispatched to, say, a hurricane or something like that. If any of that happens, again, that would be through that state process, through the state duty officer. But no, there's no enforcement, there's no inspection. They're not like an inspection team. They're not a standby team, so if people have like a confined space project that they're working on, say Husky Refinery, when they moved over to Synovus, they're doing repairs on their tanks, they hire a third party to do, essentially they stand by the whole, anything in the city limits, we do that. The Duluth Fire Department provides that service, so this is not that. This would only be for an emergency response.
Thank you, appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Councilor Swenson.
So my follow-up was, you said there was equipment associated with this, I believe, coming. Is that dedicated to Duluth, or is that shared with the others that are involved in it as well?
Mr. Swenson, that's shared. So some of the resources are specifically placed in the three different areas. Obviously, 148th is still in Duluth. So some of it's trailers, some of it's response vehicles, actual bigger trucks, and then there is a chase vehicle, just essentially a personnel van, a 15-person van. Those assets will be placed throughout. More of them will most likely be housed at the Virginia Fire Department because of their proximity to the mines and what we suspect more of the calls would be in that area. So they will have a little bit more of the resources there, but we will share those. And of course, like I said, when we had the mall collapse, we had all three entities. Duluth Fire was responding as in jurisdiction, but then the 148th and Virginia Fire had Task Force 2 team members down as well. So,
thank you, Councilor Swenson. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. Just a quick follow-up then. For this team to officially respond to something, do all three parties have to be present in that? Or say if there's something in Virginia and they have the equipment there, can they go and respond to it without Duluth having to haul up there?
Okay. Of Councilor Mayo, it could be a tiered response, and if you actually read the JPA, I realize you just got it, so I'm not criticizing for not knowing it, because I was literally just reading it myself this afternoon. So there is a stipulation in there where if we have something going on in Duluth, we do not have to necessarily send people. Same thing for Virginia. There might be something, I know, like when we had the pipeline thing, they did not need a 30-person team. And then there's specialized positions within the team. So some people are actually specialized in structural collapse. Some people are specialized in, it's called a cut team. So they would cut people out of something. So there's different specialties within the team. And depending on what the emergency is, you may get a partial team or up to a full response team.
Thanks for that clarification. That helps.
Thank you. Councilor Mayo, any final questions for Chief Cruget? Councilor Kennedy.
President Randorf, Chief Cruget, can you just tell me a little bit more on how the funding is coming from the state? Is the city paying for any costs at all? Does that come from our budget in any way?
Councilor Randorf, or President Randorf, Councilor Kennedy, right now, the only pay, I guess, that the city would be doing, so our Deputy Chief of Training, Rob Morehouse, of course, he's doing things. That's just part of his daily salary. So, I mean, there are some personnel costs, I guess, with it. But anytime we send anybody to outside training, those overtime costs are covered by the state. Like I said, any of this specialized equipment is covered by the state. So there's some, certainly there's time being spent on during our regular duty days that would cost the city. They're doing that instead of something else. But no real costs out of the budget where we're purchasing this instead of that, if that makes sense. So like, we're not buying rope for this team that we should be buying for a rescue one for in-city response or something along those lines. And we are allowed to use these, just like our hazmat team, we're allowed to use any of these resources that we house in the city for an in-city response. Depending on what it is, if it's at a facility, we may have them replace it if it's damaged. If we wreck it ourselves on a call, like say at Lester Park, we might then replace that. But we can use the equipment, we can use the resources in the city, but they're originally purchased by the state, and replacement costs. So rope has a shelf life. When it expires, we get that replaced from, again, either from the FSAC funding or the state funding.
I do have one follow-up. So if you're responding in city, is it being billed through this joint powers then, if it's a joint power action, or are we paying through city funding for a local response?
In a case like the mall collapse, Virginia and the 148th would be getting paid by the state. We are still paying for our firefighters as an in-jurisdiction. If we had a specialized thing that ran longer than like one shift period where we would have to call in extra firefighters to backfill our personnel who are on this team, that could then get billed back to the state. But generally, if it's in your city, we're already City of Duluth firefighters responding to a City of Duluth emergency. So it's not really a reimbursement process there.
So if you have to pull in overtime, the people then would maybe be you would be billing the joint powers, and then the people from overtime would be billed through the City of Duluth funding. How does that work? Because
again, right now we don't have that contract set up, but if I would assume, and I'm assuming a little bit, but I'm assuming that it would be similar to the hazmat contract. So the people on our hazmat team, if they leave the city, they get paid by the responsible party or by that state non-refundable party. The people who come in and work overtime, we get reimbursed half time because the city still has to pay the firefighter to be on duty. The firefighter's getting time and a half or whatever their overtime rate is. We only get reimbursed for that half time. So the city still has to pay for 36 firefighters every day. So that regular pay, that base pay is City of Duluth. The overage is then reimbursed. Does that make sense?
Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
No,
thank you, Councillor Kennedy. Any final questions for Chief Cruget, item 21 or item 22? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Chief, for being here. We appreciate you. All right, we will move on. We're on to item 23. We're on recreation, libraries, and authorities. Councillor Owl.
Randorf. I will be going a little slow. I'm having some vision issues. Just bear with me. Thank you very much. Item 23, Resolution 130, resolution authorizing a contract with A Plus Contractors for the Lower Spirit Mountain Nordic Trail project for an amount not to exceed $423,007.50. Item 24, Resolution 131, resolution authorizing a contract with A Plus Contractors for the Spirit Mountain Snowmobile Trails project for an amount not to exceed $179,825. Item 25, Resolution 137, resolution authorizing a 3-year non-exclusive use agreement with Eastern Little League of Duluth Incorporated for the use of Como Park Baseball Fields, John Baggs Memorial Baseball Field, and Tony Emanuel Baseball Field. Item 26, Resolution 139, resolution authorizing a 3-year non-exclusive agreement, use agreement with Duluth Girls Fast Pitch League for the use of the Helmer Carlson Fields and Piedmont Field. Item 27, Resolution 143, resolution authorizing application to the Federal Emergency Management Agency Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities Grant Program for up to $1,500,000 to continue forestry response to Emerald Ash borer damage and improve Duluth's urban forest. Item 28, Resolution 144, resolution authorizing a First Amendment to an agreement with Duluth Amateur Hockey Association for the term November 1st, 2020 through October 31st, 2023, relating to the first to the use and operation of the city's outdoor hockey facilities and adjoining properties. Item 29, Resolution 145, resolution authorizing a 3-year agreement with Duluth Amateur Hockey Association Incorporated for use and operation of the city's outdoor hockey facilities and adjoining properties for nominal consideration. Item 30, Resolution 146, resolution authorizing a 3-year agreement with Duluth Amateur Hockey Association Incorporated for the lease of the city's Freiburger Arena for nominal consideration.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Any questions on items 23 through 30? Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. On item 23, which is referring to the Nordic Trails at Spirit Mountain, I noticed that in the map it shows there is a crossing of West Skyline Parkway, and just given some of the accidents we've seen, and Ms. Peterson, I think, is in the audience, just some of the accidents we've seen, wondering about what that trail crossing will look like and if there's any, you know, enhanced pedestrian or kind of slowing that's going to go on there. And I know this is probably a lesser traveled portion of West Skyline versus what where the accident happened yesterday, but just since it's in front of mind for everyone.
Thank you for the question, Councillor Mayo, President Randorf, Councillor Mayo. You can see a map of the snowmobile trails attached to that resolution. The trails that we are proposing are either replacement trails for trails that were damaged in the 2012 flood and or reconnecting trails upper and lower chalet at Spirit Mountain. And if we're talking about crossing on Skyline Parkway specifically, I guess I'm not actually seeing that in the attachment to the resolution, but there is a crossing on Grand Avenue that follows the Knowlton Creek underpass of Grand Avenue. And so that uses the creek bed, and there isn't a snowmobile pedestrian street crossing.
So item 23, that's for the Nordic Trails, had the different attachment. Yep, you're okay.
Thank you, Councillor Mayo. Any other questions? Items 23 through 30, or any other questions on this item? Councillor Mayo.
So I think I'll let Ms. Peterson catch up, and then I had a different question about item 27 with the EAB plan, but would you prefer I ask that one right now? And
one, thank you. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry for the mix up there. So you are correct in that we are crossing Skyline Parkway there, and the goal here is to connect the ski trails at Magny Snively that are already in existence. So at this time, I'd have to double check with our project staff to see what they're planning for the road crossing itself. We do close a portion of West Skyline Parkway, but it would be further west than this because we do need access to that Magny parking lot. So I'd be happy to follow up with you before Monday on that.
Glenn, thank you. And then if I may ask the second question about item 27, just related to the Emerald Ash Borer Management Program. I know this has been something we continue to bring up, but just wanting to make sure that the option to treat is always still being offered to residents. I know there's been some confusion sometimes about folks maybe not knowing they had the option to treat, and making sure that that's a part of this. And I don't know if it's really a question, but just if you can maybe speak to that being a component of this future planning around EAB.
Mr. Randorf, Councillor Mayo, we are going to continue to pursue all efforts to reduce and mitigate and remove emerald ash borer as we can within the city. So that includes both treatment and removal of the trees themselves. You'll note that this is both response to emerald ash borer damage and improvement to our Duluth urban canopy, which isn't limited to EAB solely. So we'll see a combination of efforts to replace and increase our urban canopy collectively, while also advancing our EAB efforts.
fantastic, and I think those two have to work hand in hand, so appreciate that.
Mayo, I do have a follow-up question on that. We do have a lot of standing dead ash trees as a result. All through the hillside, you see them. Last year, you could just see them sitting there, you know, no leaves, dead. What is our plan to systematically remove those dead trees?
Question, President Randorf. I'd have to refer back to our city forester. We have one city forester and a four-person crew to address our entire urban canopy. It's a fairly small crew for the size of land that we need to cover each year, and that is in part the impetus for this grant application, because we know we're falling behind. And so as to the specific details of the plan, the number of trees and how many we can take care of each year, I can get those details for you, but in fact this grant will help us start to catch up on that progress.
Thank you so much. Councillor Kennedy.
President Randorf, thank you for doing this work. I do know that there are a lot of trees that are gone at Denfeld, and it's really pretty, it's starkingly different, I will say. So how much of the plan is removal and planting back? Do you have like a schedule or work plan? I work in the nonprofit world. What's your work plan and your timeline?
Randorf, Councillor Kennedy. So we're talking about two different sets of information here. So one would be our urban tree plan as a whole and our forestry efforts collectively. And then the second would be what is built into this grant application alone and solely. And so what you see tonight is a resolution to apply. We put these resolutions forward while we are building those plans and those budgets. So they're not yet completed and they're not yet submitted. We're still fine-tuning those.
Yeah, I would like to have I guess it'd be nice to have the community understand what that looks like, and maybe President Randorf, we can check up back up with y'all.
We would be happy to do that, President Randorf, Councillor Kennedy. Typically, these topics run through our Natural Resources Commission. So if folks are ever interested in hearing more on our tree plantings, removals, and replacements, that is a really good commission to filter that information through.
Wonderful. I don't know.
Did we receive the minutes from Natural Resources Committee?
President Randorf, Councillor Kennedy, I believe you do, just in the same way that you receive them from the Parks and Recreation Commission.
I may start to read them, though.
All right, thank you so much. Any final questions? Items 23 through 30. Thank you so much. All right, that's the end of our agenda. I do have two quick announcements. You already heard. Reminder, closed session, mark your calendars on Monday, arrive early, 5:45. Again, that's a closed session, so the public will not be in the chambers. We will be done, though, by 6:10, because that's our first personnel interview starts there. So 6:10, we'll open the doors back up. Second announcement, thank you to Councillor Kennedy for tapping us and a reminder of how we are spending our opioid settlement money that we approved last December. We've got $1.25 million in homeless encampment coordinator, $1.28 million in a substance abuse response coordinator, $267 in a victim service specialist, $100,000 in outreach supplies, $300,000 in encampment cleanup, and $300,000 in small grant opioid addiction recovery monies. It sounds like city administration is reviewing those again, and we'll have something in about 6 weeks brought forward on how this money is going to be spent, if this is going to be changed, tweaked, modified, or improved, what that will look like. So more to come on that. So thank you. Anything more to add to that, Mr. Montgomery?
No, President Randorf, I think that pretty much did it. We're just getting our arms around this very quickly, and that's exactly what we plan on doing.
Sounds good. Any final comments or questions from? All right, that's the end of agenda. Thanks so much, everyone.